It is Tuesday, December 3rd, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a big, big folk festival in Carroll County 40 years ago. The headliners were big names, the crowds were big, they exceeded expectations, and now the stories are being collected. Jacqueline Froelich has that story. And in a few minutes, two kinds of giving. Today is recognized as Giving Tuesday, and many area nonprofits are taking advantage of the designation. And some Arkansas ranchers are helping their counterparts in South Dakota, where extreme weather has taken a toll on some cattle herds.
But first, the National Weather Service says a winter storm watch has been issued for most of the region. The watch is for Thursday morning through Friday afternoon and includes predictions of snow, sleet, freezing rain, and very cold temperatures. The watch says the heaviest amounts of freezing rain are expected to accumulate in west central Arkansas and southeastern Oklahoma. Parts of northwest Arkansas and east central Oklahoma are expected to receive rain, sleet, and freezing rain. Specifically, a winter storm watch is enacted when heavy snow or significant accumulation of ice or sleet is expected in the watch area. We'll have the forecast for the next 2 days in just a few moments.
The Department of Finance and Administration says it expects an increase in the general revenue forecast in the next fiscal year of 2% compared to the current year. John Shelnut, an economist with the department, says for the current fiscal year, which ends in June, net revenue are expected to reach more than $2.9 billion.
This amount will continue to fully fund the budget and the Revenue Stabilization Act, including the small rainy day fund that is part of that. The change for current year is that it takes out that small amount of surplus that had been in the forecast on top of the Revenue Stabilization Act. So that is the only change for current year.
The numbers released yesterday come in advance of the next session of the Arkansas Legislature, which is scheduled to open in January.
The economic portion of the forecast did not change all that much. I mean, we always have some minor fluctuations. For 2015, this is the first time that we put in the tax policy changes for that. And for current year, we're still on track. Above forecast.
Governor Mike Beebe says the 2% growth from the current fiscal year to the next reflects slow growth for the state's economy.
Transit rates for Fort Smith's transit system may soon edge upward if the City Board of Directors tonight approves proposed rate increases. Ken Savage, director of the Fort Smith transit system, says increasing fuel and equipment costs are the reasons for the increased fares, which would be the first such increase since fixed routes were established in 1999.
We're going from, on the fixed routes, from $1 to $1.25 is what we're proposing, and on the demand response from $2 to $2.50 per trip, and that would be when the fixed routes are active. And we're also looking at a new rate, which is for what we term as additional services, which is basically demand response services before the fixed routes are open and then after the fixed routes are closed. And for that service, it would be $3 per trip.
Savage says the fare increase proposal was guided by a three-month public review and input period, during which residents were surveyed on potential fare increases. He says 86% of those surveyed were in favor of some kind of fare increase, while only 10% of respondents were against it, some of whom indicated that a fare increase would represent a financial hardship. But Savage says Fort Smith has several options available for low-cost fares.
We have bulk discount ticket sales. We also have monthly passes that are available. And then we have reduced fixed-route fares for the elderly and disabled. We have a limited number of free rides that are available through the Transportation Assistance Program, which is authorized by the Transit Advisory Commission. And they provide 15,000 free vouchers annually for approved agencies, and these agencies will then issue these tickets out based on their individual assessment of need for the clients of their services.
For more information on any of those programs, you can visit fortsmithar.gov/transit.
Governor Beebe is facing a lawsuit for alleged violation of the state's Freedom of Information Act. Megan Tollett, the executive director of the state Republican Party, filed suit against the governor in Pulaski County Circuit Court. In the filing, Tollett says she submitted a request to the governor for documents and records received by the governor that were from individuals seeking appointments to state boards and commissions. The request was denied under a provision of the Freedom of Information Act that grants an open records exemption to unpublished memoranda, working papers, and correspondence of the governor. Tollett and her attorneys disagree, arguing since the documents came from a third party, they're not eligible for exemption under the FOIA. Governor Beebe says he does intend to fight the lawsuit.
The city of Van Buren will likely have a larger budget next year. According to the City Wire, Mayor Bob Freeman presented city aldermen last night with a $12.07 million budget for 2014. That represents an increase of more than $200,000 over the 2013 budget. The increase includes a 1.5% cost of living raise for city employees and an increase in personnel. If the budget is approved by the City Council's regular meeting later this month, the city would hire three additional firemen and one additional policeman to be stationed at the city's municipal complex. Much of the funding for the additional personnel is slated to come from the 1% sales tax passed by city voters last year, a tax that is also set to pay for construction of a new police department, fire department, and a new senior center.
The Arkansas Department of Health is recognizing World AIDS Day, which was Sunday, with a brief commemoration today at their offices in Little Rock. The department says about 5,000 people in the state are living with HIV. The department says during this afternoon's event, 83 balloons will be released to commemorate each Arkansas resident who died from AIDS in 2013.
Both John Brown University basketball teams are scheduled to play in Siloam Springs tonight. The women will face St. Gregory's at 6, and the men will face the same opponent at 8. Also tonight, the University of Arkansas men's team will play Southeastern Louisiana at 7 inside Bud Walton Arena, and the UAFS men are in Little Rock to face Arkansas Little Rock. UAFS, a Division II team, will count their game against the Division I UALR as an exhibition.
There will be clouds tonight, a few clouds anyway, with lows in the upper 40s for most of the region. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and still warm. Highs in the upper 50s in northwest Arkansas, mid-60s tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley. Wednesday night, cloudy, lows around 30 in northwest Arkansas, lows in the upper 30s for the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large, and today is Giving Tuesday. A coast-to-coast effort, Giving Tuesday extends a week that includes big box store sales the day after Thanksgiving, an emphasis on local independent businesses the next day, and what has become a massive online shopping phenomenon on the Monday after Thanksgiving. Giving Tuesday brings nonprofits into the spotlight. A strong push for charitable giving is underway today. One of the local organizations encouraging giving is the Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas. Jody Dilday is the executive director of SPSF of Northwest Arkansas. She's with me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Thanks for having me.
And happy Giving Tuesday.
Yes, absolutely.
You've got your organization has a very strong presence on social media and online. How did you and when did you decide to really take advantage of this day?
It was last year. So this is the second year of Giving Tuesday, and last year we decided we would climb on board and try something new. Social media is important to us to reach our constituents, and this is driven by social media, so we thought it would be right up our alley.
So you participated last year. What was that like?
Last year, we didn't focus at all on the giving in terms of financial contributions. What we wanted people to do is give us their story. Give us their story about how education had made a difference in their lives. And so a lot of our scholarship recipients actually participated, as well as some of our board members. And so we decided to take that a step further this year. We're asking people to give the gift of education, but then give a shout out to the person who encouraged them in their education.
Is there anything else you have to do with Giving Tuesday? I mean, you've created this presence online and on Facebook and Twitter. Now do you sit back and see what happens?
Well, we sit back and see what happens, and we also try to drive people and get that message across. But, you know, it comes at a great time of year because a lot of people are already thinking about where they're going to make their end-of-year contributions. And so Giving Tuesday is the perfect time to do that.
Does it help, do you think, other nonprofits if more nonprofits, maybe not Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas, maybe not a nonprofit radio station, but other nonprofits Do you see it as competition, I guess is what I'm saying, or do you think it's the proverbial rising tide?
It is the rising tide. I think local retailers are not in competition with others when Black Friday, everybody wins, and we hope that everyone will win with Giving Tuesday as well.
So people can how have you set it up so people could make a contribution to the Single Parent Scholarship Fund?
Well, they can donate through our website, which is Single Parent Scholarship Fund, NWA.org. But we also have a link on our Facebook page, and we have a link through Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, wherever people might be hanging out.
Do you have conversations with the other people on your board of advisors or other people at the organization? How do you get people who maybe don't know you exist but could benefit from knowing you exist to give? How do you get to them?
I think that just like our scholarship applicants, when we ask them how did they hear about us, they tell us word of mouth that a friend of theirs benefited from receiving the scholarship. I think the same thing happens with our donors. When you fall in love with a product or a movie or a book, you tell your friends. And luckily, our supporters fall in love with our mission, and then they invite others to join them.
How many people, off the top of your head, do you know how many people have benefited from the Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas?
In our 29-year history?
Yeah.
I don't have that number off the top of my head. We served 130 families last year.
Last year alone.
Last year alone. I know that in the last 10 years, we did these numbers recently, 240 individuals have graduated with their college degree thanks to our local affiliate. But I think it's important to note that Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas just serves a three-county area, Carroll, Madison, and Washington counties. We're part of a much larger network of affiliates who are serving every county in our state. We're all doing this great, wonderful work of helping people end the cycle of poverty.
Jody Dilday is the Executive Director of Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas. The organization is participating in Giving Tuesday today, as are thousands of other nonprofits around the country. Jody, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
While Northwest Arkansas has been experiencing much cooler temperatures in recent weeks, we've yet to experience any measurable snowfall. Other parts of the country have, and some have gotten a little bit too much. In early October, a blizzard struck western South Dakota. Johnny Gonzalez with the Washington County Extension Office says the blizzard was unexpected and cattle were unable to get to water, so many died of dehydration or the extreme cold. Several ranchers lost much of their herds, and in response, Heifers for South Dakota was formed. The volunteer-driven organization has been working to get donations of live cattle to help ranching families rebuild their herds. Donations have come from places around the country, including Arkansas. Late last month, about 15 cattle were brought to the Benton County Sale Barn in Siloam Springs to help with the donation effort. Cattle were donated from Elkins, Decatur, Springdale, Siloam Springs, and Summers, Arkansas, and Southwest City, Missouri. Johnny Gonzalez helped organize the effort, not in his capacity as a county extension agent, but rather on his own personal time.
I just heard about the terrible happening up in South Dakota like some other people did, and it just kind of wrenches at you if you've taken care of livestock for a while and been out in the snow taking care of them and chopping ice to make sure that they were healthy and everything, and then you hear about something like that happening and know how helpless those people must have felt and how down they probably are.
The Office of South Dakota State Veterinarian verified the deaths of more than 15,500 animals from the early October blizzard. Nearly 14,000 of those were cattle. While helping with the relief effort, Gonzalez began working with Dr. Dwayne Thomas. Gonzalez says he received donations of cattle simply by sending some emails, placing a small article in the local newspaper, and talking to people he thought would be sympathetic to the South Dakota farmer's plight.
Farmers in general, I think, have pretty high moral standards, and they're pretty much a base of people that wants to have God on their side. And it's like if your neighbor's house burned down, everyone grabs clothes out of the closet and pans out of the cupboard, and you take over there and you share it with them. And that's just kind of how these are livestock people, and that's kind of the thing, the way that I looked at it, that's something that I had to share that I knew they were missing. So it's the same kind of a principle.
After gathering the cattle at the Benton County Sale Barn, Gonzalez planned to haul the animals to Tulsa, where another gentleman was volunteering his time to haul the cattle to Pratt, Kansas. Gonzalez's contact in Kansas was a woman named Sandra Levering, who was also planning on collecting about 15 head of cattle before having the entire load taken to South Dakota. When requesting donations, Gonzalez asked people to give animals that represented the area well, that they were proud to own, and that would be appreciated by the South Dakota farmers. Gonzalez says this donation effort was not to be used as a way to get rid of cattle that have problems. While the donations were appreciated, Gonzalez would have liked to have done more for the South Dakota ranchers.
You know, it would have been nice to have had a full semi-load, but still yet, with the prices they are, that's a good-sized donation, and it's a big donation for someone to donate an animal right now with the prices the way they are.
Gonzalez says the base of these animals are worth about $1,200, and on the upper end, they could be worth $1,800 or more. He says the biggest thing that affects the difference in price is the cattle's stage of reproduction. In addition to sorting out the logistics of shipping the cattle north, their health also had to be taken into consideration, and it required a bit of paperwork.
It's real specific now on keeping track of a permanent identification on each animal and where they are going as they move around the country. And this is all part of what makes this a little more complicated right now. It goes back to the mad cow case that happened a few years back, and then the country of origin labeling. And so now then there are stricter requirements on keeping track of animals as they move around the country, specifically breeding animals. It's not quite as much requirement if the animal's just going to slaughter or going to a feedlot for feeding for slaughter, but animals that are going from one herd to another, there's some stricter requirements now.
That permanent identification is usually in the form of a silver metal tag that contains a distinct number and is attached to a cow's ear. Prior to loading up the donated cattle, at least one red cow needed to be examined by Dr. Dwayne Thomas. The animal was ushered into a large metal contraption that held her in place while the vet examined a swelling on her rear leg. He explained that sometimes that's an indication the animal could have lymphoma or cancer. Following an internal examination, he concluded it was an abscess and she was healthy enough to be transported north. While he did have to fill out paperwork on each cow, Dr. Thomas said the cattle are not all required to undergo a specific test.
One reason is that Arkansas is considered a brucellosis-free state, and there are many states that are that way, but with them being free, then we don't have to pull any blood and run tests or anything like that.
For more information, you can visit helpforsouthdakota.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is here for your community, and in this season of giving, we hope you can help out as well. KUAF's Giving Tree will benefit the Outback program from Fayetteville Public Schools during the holidays. The Outback program is looking for non-perishable food items and gently used donations of children's clothing, shoes, and coats. Simply bring your donation to KUAF at 9 South School in Fayetteville and place it under our tree. Thanks and happy holidays.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, a challenge was issued by Antoinette Grajeda last week.
Yes. Once a month, we like to do a music review, and we were talking about it being time for Christmas, but I decided that people should pick one of their favorite albums instead of doing something that was new.
So Antoinette and I will reveal our favorite Christmas CDs and let you hear part of them. That's in about 13 minutes on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
But first, 4 years after Woodstock, a circle of friends living in Eureka Springs decided to stage an Ozark Heritage Family Folk Festival in remote Carroll County. But instead of families, thousands upon thousands of people showed up. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to the site on the 40th anniversary.
Dustin, Todd Griffith, his spouse April, and Desmo, the terrier, hike up a forested dirt road this frigid Sunday morning towards what was the amphitheater for the Ozark Mountain Folk Fair. Along the way, Dustin stops to show us traces of abandoned campsites covering the 110-acre parcel inhabited by hippies 40 years ago.
You'd be wandering through the woods and come across like these little campfire rings, and this one's kind of grown up, but you can still see, like, you know, right here, these old bottles, and you know, this was where someone camped during the festival, and there's just spots like this all over the place up here.
Dustin is an ACE mechanic. April, a research librarian at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. Dustin's people have lived on this land for several generations. He spent his childhood exploring every bit of it.
Well, basically, this creek that we're just about to walk across is kind of... It kind of splits. Basically, the property is two hillsides, and they come together and kind of form a little bit of a natural sort of bowl.
Along the way, we see several half-buried concrete pads covered in rusted iron pipe. Water spigots, says April Griffith.
There's a really great photo in the Springdale News of a young hippie girl washing her feet right next to these spigots. It was really neat when I started doing the research and I saw it and I said, oh, hey, I know exactly where that is.
Dustin, April, and their family are the only ones now who know where this place is. Dustin's grandparents, who occupied the parcel at the time, leased the property to create a temporary Ozarks Folk Festival village. And artifacts from that fair are scattered everywhere.
It's mostly, you know, concert detritus. There's some really old vintage bottles. I like old things, so to me that's been the most interesting thing is some really beautiful, like, artisan glass bottles. Someone drinking a big bottle of wine. I think we found a keychain. We found that moccasin.
When I was little, I found a six-pack of Dr. Pepper in the creek. And in the steel cans, was still had the plastic thing on it. And I was like, oh my God, it's a whole six pack of Dr. Pepper. And I picked it up and half the cans were gone. It was just the top half of them. They'd been sitting in the creek, like trying to stay cold. And the whole bottom of them were just, all six of them were gone on the bottom half.
With the tabs, remember those? A well drilled especially for the festival is just up the hill, which gravity fed three individual water spigot systems, including a kitchen. Above that, the amphitheater bowl, Dustin Griffith.
I'm not real sure where the stage was completely laid out, but it was definitely in here. And you can see, like, there's lumber left over from, like, in some of the pictures you can see this big wooden kind of wall that they built, and there's all these nails, like, in some of these trees right in here. And what my dad told me is they cut down trees and laid them on the hillside. And that was the seating.
Nothing remains except a few old boards half dissolved into the dirt. But 40 years ago, those log benches were packed with fans, listening to a remarkable amalgam of musical acts. Earl Scruggs Review, John Lee Hooker, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Leo Kottke, Mason Prophet, the Lewis Family, John Hartford, Big Mama Thornton, Clifton Chenier and the Cajun Band, John Loudermilk, and of course the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, and more. Tickets to the event, $12. According to fair co-organizer Albert Skiles, the Ozark Mountain Folk Fair was unprecedented.
You had black gospel music. You had Earl Scruggs, the traditional bluegrass. You had James Cotton Blues Band that was just awesome. You know, lots of drums, lots of brass. So they were all within a certain circle of musical, I guess, genre.
Skiles, who's an amateur drummer, got to play on stage with John Lee Hooker as the house band.
Anyway, he showed up out of the blue in a helicopter because he decided he really wanted to play, but he never said anything to anybody. He just got his guitar and walked out there and started playing, and we were backstage wondering where he was. And all of a sudden, everybody started screaming. And he said, well, he's out there playing. I said, well, we better go get on the drums.
Albert Skiles had just graduated from architecture school in Texas and moved to the Ozarks in 1972, looking to homestead. He landed in Eureka Springs, where he met Ed Jeffords, a West Coast journalist and rock and roll promoter who had also moved to Eureka. Jeffords, a Rector native, had formed the Ozark Mountain Folklore Association, used his connections in the rock and roll industry to book talent for the folk fair. His event was endorsed by Arkansas Parks and Tourism, Eureka Springs City Council and Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Arkansas State Legislature. A crew of six assisted Jeffords in organizing the Ozark Mountain Heritage Fair, which reportedly cost $25,000 to set up. Jeffords' intent was to create a family heritage event, blending national and regional southern bluegrass, gospel, and folk musicians with 40 working Ozark craftsmen and farm fresh foods. Instead, along with a few country families who showed up, thousands of pot-smoking, long-haired hippies swamped the festival.
It was great. It was great. It was a great release because everybody looked just like you. And there was a counterculture going on at the time, the Vietnam War and so forth. It was great to be among your friends.
Albert Skiles was in charge of graphics and posters and assisted with festival site design. The ecology and natural foods movement were just taking off, he said. Fairgoers parked along Highway 23 North, just south of the Missouri-Arkansas border, and hiked through the front gate. But it was impossible to construct fencing around the perimeter, so Jeffords hired a security firm from Tulsa, Men on Horseback, to protect the place. But the cowboys couldn't contain the hordes sneaking through the woods. They eventually split. Attendance numbered between 20,000 to as high as 150,000, a figure provided to regional media by the Arkansas State Police. And even more would have come, Skiles said, if the weather had cooperated. Torrential rains and lightning shut the festival down Saturday night, reopening Sunday. Fair organizers published a special newspaper program guide, now yellowed with age, advising patrons to bring necessary camping gear, but to leave behind their hassles, alcohol, weapons, prejudices, and politics.
Reminiscing here, reading about it, they had one of the first times I could see advertising organic vegetarian fare, not just hot dogs, you see. And this was, I think, an offshoot of the Earth Day was just in 1970, the first Earth Day. So you have Earth Day, you have the Vietnam War, you have Woodstock, you have all these influences, and then you had this great influx of artists and musicians and architects like myself that moved to Eureka in the early 70s. And this is what helped formulate this idea, and this event was a showcase for all that.
According to the Eureka Springs Times Echo newspaper, conservatives were not at all pleased with the event in their backyard, but local businesses were. Even the performers were blown away by all the good vibes, said John Lee Hooker and Leo Kottke, who since returned to Eureka to perform. Thousands of black and white photos taken by Albert Skiles and others attest to this mellow vibe. Albert Skiles eventually left Eureka Springs to establish a successful architectural firm in northwest Arkansas. Fair organizer Ed Jeffords also moved on, obtaining a law degree, eventually serving as assistant Texas attorney general. He died in 2002. The fair was staged just once. It apparently went bankrupt, with so many hippies breaching the perimeter. Adjacent to the Griffith family homesteads, the parcel has stood empty. So will the family post any interpretation and provide public tours someday? April Griffith.
What stands out about this event and what it sort of connects to the Ozarks in the bigger sense is the Back to the Land movement. I think a lot of those people attended this concert, and I think that's probably part of the history of that. So I think maybe when more people are interested in this part of history as it becomes more and more historic and there's more interest, yeah, we'd be happy to give people tours.
Still, she wonders at why so little is known or written about the epic 1973 Ozark Mountain Folk Fair.
I think one of the interesting things about researching this event is that it's very apocryphal because there's not a whole lot of documentation. There were people who were there. There were people who were there who have died. There were people who were there who maybe their memories aren't the best because a lot of substances being being consumed at that time. So there's different versions to the story. So what I've been doing is as I hear different versions, I've just been keeping it all. Because, you know, I'm trying to collect as much as I can because, you know, like so much history, who knows what's really the truth. So I just want to keep all versions of it.
April Griffith has said about formally documenting the festival, and perhaps someday the museum will host a special exhibit, she says. Extensive footage of the fair, taken by noted American music documentary filmmaker Les Blank, who was there, exists, likely buried in his archive. He, too, has passed away. As for Dustin and April Griffith, they're constructing another homestead on the family property, where they intend to raise their family and tend to the festival's ghosts. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to read April Griffith's blog on the Ozark Mountain Folk Fair, you can visit The Backstay at shilohmuseum.org. One book has been published. It's a collection of pictures that was gathered by photographer Jim Mathis. You can see that at jimmathis.zenfolio.com. That's jimmathis.zenfolio.com. And that's music of Big Mama Thornton, one of the headliners at the Folk Fair 40 years ago. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The cold is coming soon, but before any wintry mix of ice and snow can cover us up, let's think about spring. This morning, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals announced their starting times for games in 2014. Opening night at Arvest Ballpark is Thursday, April 10th. First pitch that night scheduled for 6:05. During the rest of the season, most weeknight games will begin at 7:05. Most Saturday night games will begin at 6:05. And mark your calendar for those rare workday matinees. There will be 11:05 a.m. start times on April 23rd, 28th, and May 6th. A 12:05 p.m. first pitch for June 18th.
You don't have to wait until spring to fish for trout in Lake Brittany and Bella Vista, though you do need a Property Owners Association ID card or have a friend with you who has a card. Those who can fish there will have a better chance of pulling a rainbow trout out of the water. The lake was stocked last week with 1,000 trout. The fish average 11 to 12 inches, and more rainbow trout are scheduled to be put into the lake in the winter and early spring.
Tim Ernst continues his tour of area libraries with a stop at the Bentonville Public Library December 7th at 1 p.m. It's free. It's open to the public. For more information, bentonvillelibrary.org.
A group of students from the University of Arkansas Music Department will perform a benefit concert, Hope After Hyon, at 5 p.m. Sunday, December 8th in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall. The concert is being held to raise money for the victims of Typhoon Hyon in the Philippines. A reception will follow after the concert. All proceeds from the benefit will go to the Philippine Red Cross and to Gawad Kalinga, which translates to Give Care, a Philippine relief organization engaged in rehabilitating and reconstructing homes damaged or destroyed by the typhoon. The event is organized by the Fulbright Scholars at the University of Arkansas, a registered student organization at the U of A, in cooperation with the Office for International Students and Scholars and the Northwest Arkansas Filipino American Association.
For the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program, an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Rachel Silva with Arkansas's Historic Places. Named after the calico-colored bluffs on the north side of the White River, Calico Rock initially developed as a popular steamboat landing. Construction on the St. Louis, Iron Mountain, and Southern Railroad through Calico Rock began in 1902, and in 1905 the town was incorporated. The local economy consisted of small cotton and livestock farms and timber-related industries. Downtown Calico Rock boasts many distinctive rough-cut stone commercial buildings. Today, Calico Rock is predominantly a destination for tourists and retirees, with its close proximity to the White River, Norfolk Lake, Blanchard Springs Caverns, and the Buffalo National River. The Calico Rock Historic District was listed in the National Register of Historic Places in 1985. Learn more about Arkansas's historic places at arkansaspreservation.com.
A Christmas confession. I have, for years now, been trying to construct the perfect Christmas music playlist. An ever-evolving beast, it currently has 195 songs on my iPhone and would last more than 13 hours before a single song is repeated. It includes choral arrangements and Louis Prima, Bruce Springsteen, The Ramones, Merle Haggard, and Nat King Cole. It does not include Barking Dogs or Grandma Getting Run Over by a Reindeer. My desire for a mixture of the sacred and the secular, of the established and the new, is what makes listening to most Christmas albums somewhat difficult. No offense to James Taylor, his voice is still one of the most pleasant sounds on the planet, but a dozen straight-ahead versions of familiar Christmas songs is, well, too much of a good thing for one sitting. Every few years, there's a compilation of different artists singing Christmas songs on one CD that avoids the usual traps, but very rare is the single-artist Christmas CD that can sound fresh every year the tree is trimmed. But for 22 Christmas seasons, Brave Combo's It's Christmas Man has been delivering the goods.
Who's got a beard that's long and white?
Santa's got a beard that's long and white.
Who comes around on a special night?
Santa comes around on a special night. Special night, beard that's white.
Recorded in 1991, It's Christmas Man has 15 songs that capture the then four-man band from Denton, Texas at their most inspired. The uninitiated can be forgiven for looking at the liner notes and assuming the record is too much holiday novelty. Feliz Navidad is a cumbia, or Little Drummer Boy is a Cuban-influenced rumba. But Brave Combo has always taken the songs they record and the musical forms they play with just the right amount of reverence, without becoming too scholarly about the whole matter. Oh, Christmas Tree, for example, is a musical collage that's reinterpreted as a samba. This is music intended for all the brightest things associated with the holiday season and for moving about. It's not surprising that the Brave Combo live shows that are formed around the holidays have become among their loyal fans' favorites.
Hanukkah, Hanukkah, the sweet celebration. Around the feast we gather in complete jubilation. Many are the reasons for good cheer. Now that the season of lights is here. Many are the reasons for good cheer. Now that the season of lights is here. Together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring.
The band says it worked out their arrangements for the record in the summer before hitting the studio, often working up a sweat on a Texas stage in July. That's probably why the songs work so well. If you can get a crowd to dance to Christmas music in San Antonio when it's 100 degrees, the music can stand on its own, with or without the holiday trimmings. There are four originals on the record as well, from a cha-cha called It's Christmas to a polka called Santa's Polka.
Oh, it was Christmas Eve. Me and my cousin Steve were pulling an all-nighter. Our parents were gone. We thought it would be swift to catch them with the gifts and prove that all their stories of Santa were wrong. We played my dad's LPs of polka melodies and danced around until we collapsed on the couch. Then up on the roof, I heard the sound of hooves, and downward through the chimney came the real living proof. It's Santa's polka.
There is time to breathe, too. A heartfelt Ave Maria is embraced by acoustic guitar, and a no-nonsense Please Come Home for Christmas is as poignant as that song's ever been. The crowning glory may be the end of the CD, a version of Jingle Bells that's a wisp of a version, clocking in at under a minute. And maybe that's the way Christmas CDs should be. Unexpected, delightful, and welcomed back year after year. Brave Combo's It's Christmas Man, recorded more than two decades ago, is still available online at the band's website, as well as other major online retailers.
Last year, in his search for good Christmas music, Kyle came across a new album called Holidays Rule. The compilation record features classic Christmas tunes sung by a wide range of artists, from The Shins to Calexico to Paul McCartney. When it comes to Christmas songs, I am typically a traditionalist. Give me an old school crooner like Nat King Cole singing Oh Holy Night, and I'm golden. Growing up, I remember balking at modern singers producing their takes on traditional songs on the radio. While they were talented, it just didn't sound like what I was used to hearing. I found the creation of new Christmas songs to be silly, though there were a few that became so prevalent that I had to reluctantly accept them as part of the Christmas songbook. I'm talking to you, Mariah Carey. All this to say, I was pleasantly surprised to find how much I enjoyed this album full of modern artists putting their own spins on traditional songs. On the opening track, the band Fun manages to infuse their unique sound into Sleigh Ride and maintain and perhaps even improve the fun the song typically evokes.
Just hear the sleigh bells jingling, ring tink tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for sleigh ride together with you. Outside
One of my favorites this time of year is Baby, It's Cold Outside. The rendition by Rufus Wainwright and Sharon Van Etten has a tempo that's a little slow for my taste, but their vocals are great. Another duo on the album is The Civil Wars, who sing I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. I was unfamiliar with this tune, but the group brings its usual haunting sound to this track, which is an interesting addition to the typically upbeat and joyful songs heard this time of year.
Heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men.
While I appreciate the simplicity that can be brought to Christmas songs, I do like the tunes that seem bigger than life because of a large choir growing more exultant with each verse, or just through the use of a large band. The latter is present on May Every Day Be Christmas, another song that's new to me. The track, which features Irma Thomas and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, is a fun listen and also an excellent song to dance to with someone when you need a break from decorating the Christmas tree. Trust me on this one.
May every day be Christmas, and every day be blessed. Let the end of every day be filled with happiness. And may the Lord be good to you.
I realize we've been discussing Christmas songs, but I'm about to cheat just a little bit here. In my defense, the title of this album is Holidays Rule, so it doesn't exclusively feature Christmas songs. The last track on the album, for example, is, perhaps appropriately, Auld Lang Syne by Andrew Bird. The track preceding it is What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? This is one of my favorite songs of the season in general, and the back and forth between the head and the heart vocalists is absolutely charming.
But in case I stand one little chance, here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Oh.
Whether or not you're a Christmas song traditionalist, one thing's for sure. As musicians continue to sing holiday tunes, there's bound to be the perfect soundtrack to fit everyone's own unique desired sound of the season. This is Ozarks at Large.
Oh come Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here, until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
KUAF will host a Christmas-themed show at 6:30 p.m. December 4th at the Fayetteville Public Library. The public's invited to be part of this audience as the Ozarks at Large team will interview local nonprofits about the importance of giving year-round. Other guests include Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, and musical performances will include Adams Collins Trio, Jones and Leah, and Farmer and the Markets. The event will be recorded, and portions of it will be broadcast during the December 24th editions of Ozarks at Large. It's free, and it's open to the public. Guests are invited to bring non-perishable food items, which will then be donated to the Fayetteville Public Schools Outback Program. More information is available at our website, KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. The McElroy House in Yell County will soon publish the Garden Book Project, a community-based publication that will highlight living gardening traditions in the Yell and Pope County areas of the Arkansas River Valley. Ozarks at Large's Meredith Martin Motes is collecting many of the stories from the lifelong gardeners who will be included in the book.
James Obie Woods of Dardanelle, Arkansas, raises a large garden each year for family and friends. The garden lot, about the size of a big backyard, is located just a few blocks from his own home, out behind the house where his parents once lived. The family has been gardening on that same plot of land for decades now. Having recently retired from Entergy, Mr. Woods is active in the community, working with youth and generating money for local scholarships. Gardening is a spring and summer hobby that keeps his family and fresh food all year long. In conjunction with the McElroy House's research into local gardening traditions, earlier this year, Mr. Woods let us come visit his garden and shared with us how he learned to work the soil from his mother and father and why gardening still matters to him all these years later.
Got a Rucker, better boys, better girls. I've got some Travelers, beefsteak. That's about the variety of those. And then I just put out the banana peppers, the banana sweet, no hot peppers. And that's just crookneck squash. I got a little okra and my cucumbers. Just I put those in late, so they're just coming up pretty good now. Mother's originally from Oklahoma. My dad come up from from the east. Mississippi, I believe, is where most of his people came up from that way. And they ended up in Old Arkansas. My dad was born and raised in Old Arkansas. And my mother up into Oklahoma. And then Muskogee, Oklahoma, I believe. And then they met in Ola. How that happened, I have no idea. And then they all just moved this direction to Dardanelle, and that's where we were born and raised right here. It was after Dad had got down and couldn't put a garden in anymore, so Wayman and I, my brother, we started. It's probably about, maybe 17 years ago, maybe, or 18. And then Wayman moved from here, and then I continued to try to put one in every year. And, of course, my mother was living then, and she would sit at the back window and guide and direct me and give me orders. And so started from that. She would tell me, put your peas here and put corn there and put your tomatoes there, and it's time to put this out. It's too early to put this out. So she kept me going. These are green beans, corn, and this normal stuff, cabbage. Some carrots sometimes, beets, or squash and okra, cucumbers. And sometimes we do the brown beans brown improved beans or pinto beans, I guess you'd call them. And just things like that. I had some watermelon cantaloupe several times. Still get some volunteer vines come up down there now, and I just nurse those, and sometimes I make them, sometimes I don't. My mother would do the canning. My wife is a good freezer bag person, and we put up things like that, beans, corn. As a matter of fact, I have some from last year in there now. And Dad used to get peaches and apples. Of course, he had one peach tree, and they used off of it, and then he'd buy it out, buy sellers, and they would dry them. And she would dry them up on top of this, like a shed, of cover them up with cover them up on the bottom and put them on top and then lay screen and sheets or something over top to keep the birds from eating them, I suppose. And anyway, she would dry those things, and all through the winter we had peach and apple pies. To me, I just enjoy doing it for the time that I can have out there, and I just like seeing stuff grow, and I like to see the results, and I enjoy eating it. And of course, most of my family do, and it's sort of a garden like that. I just share it with everybody. I'm retired, and they give me something in addition to do besides mow grass all the time. I guess I should be in my garden weeding it instead of out there mowing grass. But, yeah, it's pretty good exercise, and it's good for you to be outside, I think. I'm just not an inside person. Last year I probably made, I'll say 10, 12 bushels of purple hull peas. Also maybe 4 or 5 bushels of the green beans. And then we'll do natural one, and when the gardening season almost over, I'll clean out a pretty good place, and I'll plant some like turnip and mustard green. Mm-hmm. And I'll have a few collard plants that sets out. So, and that's about it. That'll take me into the fall.
I'm constantly looking back at that window sometimes. I'm telling the truth, I honestly do. I just look back occasionally and think about it, you know. Yeah. You know, that was just something that I did because this is what she wanted anyway. Because Dad didn't want it every year. And this is just something that if we had done that, she would have gotten out there herself.
James Obie Woods lives in Dardanelle, Arkansas. This piece was recorded earlier this year in connection with our work at the McElroy House Organization for Cultural Resources and Community Action. This is part of our larger Garden Book Project, a community-based media effort working to shed light on the living gardening traditions in the community and the gardeners who keep these traditions alive. In sharing these stories, we're also organizing within the community, working toward community-led initiatives that ensure everyone in Pope and Yell counties have access to affordable, healthy food. You can learn more about our Garden Book Project at mcroyhouse.wordpress.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Meredith Martin Motes.
Meredith Martin Motes is the director of the McElroy House in Yell County, a grassroots community-based organization working to find local solutions to local problems. You can also read more of her work at her blog, boileddownjuice.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Dry Fork.
Dry Fork, that's as you're heading east, right?
It's in Carroll County along 412.
I guess as we're heading east. I mean,
as we are heading
east. You could be on the other side of Dry Fork and
you
be
could.
As you're heading west.
It's true.
But there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Busy weekend?
Kind
it was
of.
A longer weekend? I mean, there was some Thanksgiving in there and whatnot.
Right. Mostly I did. I mean, I was busy doing shopping because I just really wanted to be done with it.
Are you?
Just about. I have one person left to buy for.
Well, I don't need much.
I need to check with Santa and see if you've been a good boy because
okay.
I don't know about that.
Tomorrow night we have our Christmas show taping at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Yes, we will have musical performances by Farmer and the Markets and Leah and Jones and the Adams Collins Trio plus one.
Plus one. Since the start of this, it's grown from a trio to a quartet.
Yes, quartet. That's the word I wanted.
And then
you will have some other interviews in there, too, including with some local nonprofits, kind of about the idea of giving year-round and not just during kind of the season of giving, if you will. So that all starts at 6:30 tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. The public is invited to attend.
Absolutely free.
It's free. But we would, if you would like to bring a non-perishable food item, we are collecting non-perishable items for the
Outback program
through the Fayetteville Public Schools.
Right. Also, coats or shoes that could be worn for
right. And this program benefits families in need in the district.
Right.
So, and that's who we as KUF are. That's our charity of choice this
right.
season. So, if you'd like to help us with that and come have a good time tomorrow, 6:30. If you can't make it, we will broadcast portions of that on December 24th.
Right, at noon and on Christmas Eve at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
We sure would like to see you there. And if you can't make it but you still want to make a donation, you can do that at 9 South School. We have a tree up. You can do it there.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much for that. And we look forward. I think it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night.
Hope so.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Antoinette will be with Christina tomorrow for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And we'll tell you more about the weather as we find out. Thanks, Antoinette.
Thank you.